Hey everybody, John Schneider here. I don't know if you know this or not, but we are over at YouTube. So if you head over there, you'll be able to search up at Food Afield Podcast. There's all sorts of short videos, some how-to videos and high production value type stuff. And the other thing, it'd be great if we could kick this Instagram account in the butt. Head over to Instagram. Again, we're at Food Afield Podcast. I know, really original. It is filled with all sorts of behind the scenes stuff, a lot of photography, and then of course some entertaining short videos as well. So it'd be great if you gave that a follow. And by all means, please tell your friends and family, anybody that might appreciate this type of content. So thanks so much. Enjoy the rest of the episode.
This is the Food Afield Podcast, a show about wild food ingredients and how to collect them. And now, broadcasting from the wilds of Alberta, is your host, John David Schneider.
Hey, buddy, it's good to see you again. I've missed your face.
Yeah, since April, it's just like the time is just blown by.
Oh, really?
I feel busy. I don't feel busy. I feel connected to some things. And then I feel like with yourself, it's like disconnected. And then it's like, oh, geez.
It is worth a conversation, especially the last day of this month. Tomorrow is the last day of this month. The men's mental health month.
Absolutely. You know? Absolutely.
Let's talk about that for a bit, because I know this is a great segue, because I recorded a little session yesterday when I was out in the bush and I was collecting some materials for, number one, I was trying out my new mountain bike, and number two, I was collecting some materials for building a landing net. Yeah, I've been struggling lately with my mental health, and it's hard to pinpoint why exactly that is. Talked a little bit about this as well. Like, I'm interested in your...
There, you know, I've been talking to like a few people, you know, women as well. And there just seems to be this down cycle kind of right now. So I have found like over the last like couple of months, maybe like sort of the spring-ish period, man, I'm low energy, kind of foggy. I've had ebbs and flows of like my body hurts, and I'm like, I'm 56, you know, and it shouldn't quite be like this. And, you know, sort of like, you like skeleton hurt. Like you're kind of like you work for a day, and then afterwards you go hunting and you're walking around or whatever. It's like, that's the core of where. And so then that kind of like drains your energy or vice versa. But I definitely feel physically kind of in a low trough right now. And of course, mentally that kind of like drags you down as well. So like your motivation to do stuff, your ability to be creative, to do stuff, to shake stuff off that doesn't work. It's been, the last little bit has been a bit of a low part. And I can't explain it. Honestly, I'm not quite sure what it is.
I'm in the exact same boat, dude, for the last month, I want to say. For me, not so much the physical. I mean, you're in great shape too. So, but it for me, it's been a challenge for my business, for the Food Afield Podcast. And it's been this sort of this thing that but the symptoms are exactly the same. The fogginess, the lack of energy, the lack of creativity, the lack to want to go out and do stuff that you enjoy.
Yeah.
And I'm actually more curious in identifying a solution to that. But it is interesting that we have similar sort of symptoms of different problems.
You know, so part of it is kind of making me think that there may be some naturalness to this that's seasonally related. You would think kind of like that trough, that low period would be winter, late winter. You're tired of winter, you're homebound, you're, you know, the gray skies, the whole vitamin D thing, And that's when you would, you know, maybe less active, like you would kind of think, okay, that, and then spring comes along and it's like the weather gets nice and things green up and they smell nice and the sun is out. And then it's like your body goes, yay, you know, and like, and you perk up, where I've experienced the opposite of that. So, and like I'm hearing from you and from a few others. So I'm like, maybe there's something seasonally related to this that's it's a spring thing.
I wonder too if it has some, I hadn't thought of that, Mark. That's pollen. Interesting. Oh, definitely for me. My allergies are about to kick me in the ass here, and I'm just starting to feel that, which I detest. I detest the first 2 weeks of July, you know, because since I'm 10 years old, it's been the most horrible time of year for me, right?
I hated physical, all of summer.
Yeah. As a physical kid. Agony for me. Yeah, absolutely. But I've been wondering too how much it has to do with our connectiveness to technology. I mean, you hear this over and over again. It's become such a cliche, right? But for you and I, trying to grow our brand with these podcasts, the social media goes hand in hand. And so I find myself, you know, connected to my computer and hustling and posting content. And I really enjoy all of those things. But it's sort of a, when I'm doing that, I'm grinding, I'm hustling, and things don't quite happen in this time frame that I'm expecting. And so I can feel my mental energy just slowly draining away as I go in these stints of trying to hustle this business, which is hard. I mean, podcasting and growing a personal brand, when you're talking about things that aren't trendy, you know, it's hard, man. And especially it's hard at our age when maybe we don't quite get the nuances that, you know, young people might have with respect to technology. But,
you know, there's some truth to that. I believe there is some truth, you know, to that, that's attached to this thing that we're trying to do. I kind of feel like engagement has also been a little bit low during this period in the springtime where I've been a little bit low. So I've been trying to chalk it up to, like, it's not me. It's, the world hasn't gone, oh, we hate this guy now, right? Like, nobody's trying to cancel me. Like, I've got, you know, there's another social media thing with Twitter that was, you know, like death threats and all this kind of stuff. And it was like, it's a horrible, horrible platform to jump into the fray.
TikTok and, is probably even worse, dude.
Oh, really?
Oh, it's brutal.
No, haven't gone there. So I don't want to give... Well, I don't really care about that. TikTok and the foreign countries would have access to my bank account. It's like, fly at it. It's like, maybe you'll make a payment because there's nothing to take out of it.
Exactly.
So, make a mortgage payment for me, maybe.
Yeah, but there you go.
Yeah, so I'm trying to, you know, maybe everybody's kind of going through like this kind of quiet period, you know, a little bit of a lull into spring. And, you know, so engagement's down a little bit. Yes, it is. it is challenging running these platforms because there is a monthly expense where I'm just constantly being bombarded by bills, stock photo accounts, hosting accounts, website hosting things. This platform that we're talking on right now, where we host our podcast, and it's just like the first of the month rolls around and it's like bang, 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 bang,
ding,
bang.
Ding,
there's all
ding,
these charges going to my credit card. And some of them are the annual charges, like, oh, it's $300 for this and $400 for that. And you're like, oh shit, has it been a year already? Yeah. And so those things hit, as you know, as well. And yeah, it's kind of a whole bunch of things. And so, yeah. And you know, the other thing that I've probably got stuck in a little bit since we were hunting together in the springtime is turtling back into a cave and being alone in this stuff and not having a team, not having like collaborators, mm-hmm. you're left to your own devices. And sometimes your brain gets the better of you. You don't, you know, you can have a low day and then John's like shows up at the studio in the morning. He's like, oh, what a great day. Hey man, like let's yeah. pick it up and do this, do yeah. that. And the next thing you know, and oh my God, like I'm all excited too. Right.
Yeah.
When you're doing this Lone Ranger, it's like the only thing that cheers you up is the dog. and if the dog wants even, to sleep.
I don't even have that. So I know exactly. I got my cat.
You just have a cat that wants to tell you to screw off. Leave me alone.
No, I got Chippy Dippy. He's a good boy. He's my guy.
Hey folks, it's Mark Hall, host of the Hunter Conservationist Podcast in Cranbrook, British Columbia. Join co-host Curtis and I as we have nuanced conversations with scientists, First Nation leaders, hunters, trappers, book authors, and biologists about wildlife science, conservation, and responsible hunting in Canada. You can find the Hunter Conservationist Podcast wherever you download podcasts. You wanted to talk solutions. I feel for myself, that is part of it in what we do is just like the old guys are getting at Tim's every Monday morning for coffee, right? Government and you know, and it's like, they're mentally healthy because they do that. And you and I are sitting here in yep. our computer trying to do all this great stuff for hunting and conservation, but we're not sitting down at Tim's and having a coffee and kind of like picking each other up. You know, you and Kevin and stuff, you get together in the fall and then you have camp and I don't know, maybe that changes the whole dynamic, but you guys have been locked out of the bush this spring. Mm-hmm. You know, you're probably trying to do your thing. Kevin's trying to do his thing and I'm trying to do my thing and maybe there needs to be a, I don't know, virtual campfire or whatever. What are you working on? How you feeling? Yeah.
Like a weekly, if not multi-day sort of phone call. But, you know, one of the symptoms that I have is even doing that. It's like, you know, Kevin and I, too, I don't know how he's feeling in all of this. I mean, he's terribly busy, so we have troubles connecting even over the phone. But part of my sort of lull, one of my symptoms is that I don't want to talk to anybody. And it's an effort. It was like, you know what I think about you and you know how much I love you, but it was an effort to call you or to even text you. Right. So that's one of my big symptoms is,
you know,
to get together with even the people I love becomes sometimes a chore. Right. So I don't know. Yeah. But the solution, you're right. The thing that I did yesterday, you know, to get out, you know, it was really good just to be out in the bush for a couple hours. I got nailed by a bunch of bees, which didn't help me on. I walked past. We have these beehives. People that listen to the show probably know the beehives. It's where we hunt whitetails. We've been successful with whitetails over the year, you know, the From the Wild series and on the podcast. So I walked past these beehives like literally thousands of times over the years, and I've never once been stung. And yesterday I rode my bike past them really fast, you know, and all of a sudden I was just being swarmed. Like they were coming after me and stinging me on my head and in my,
That's that universe thing. It's kind of like when you're down and you're kind of pissed off. what used to happen to me when I worked in the woods, like when I did forestry work, right? It would be hot in the summertime and there'd be like, you'd have your allergies and you'd be in some like shitty place or whatever and you didn't want to be there, and because in forestry work sometimes you have to go to the places, you know, to run a line or something like that where you wouldn't go if you're hunting. It's like, there's no way I'm going down there or through that mess or whatever, but you have to. And that's about the time when you're at your absolute worst, some branch is cocked back on the trail and you hit the trigger and it smacks you in the eye and it's like, so I'm just thinking, you know, the universe is like, hey, he's in a bit of a downturn. He's kind of pissed off at the world or whatever. And it's like the bees are like, shh, 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 he's coming.
Let's have some fun.
Yeah. Oh, look at his stupid bike. Right.
That's, oh, so. I made a joke on Instagram yesterday that if you wanted to see somebody like pedal like a madman, that was your opportunity. Cause I was just pedaling as fast as I could go. It was up a little bit of a hill. So I was geared lower. So I'm just, my legs are moving a million miles an hour, but I'm still only moving like 5 miles an hour. You know, yeah. So the bees are
wrong gear.
Why did I get 21
gears? It's like, which one should I be in?
I'm flailing my hat around, you know, and then it goes flying. And I had my boom pole in my hand and it goes flying. Like I was just spraying gear everywhere, pedaling like a maniac and not really accomplishing anything. So, yeah,
that's funny.
But you know what? It was now when, you know, now that that was yesterday.
It's funny now. I mean,
yeah, it's hilarious, right? Like, you know, and it makes you feel good that you went out and got stung by a bunch of bees. So, you know, and then just sitting here and talking with you, man, you know, that's part of the solution. It gives you that little bit of dopamine. Yeah, right?
So that's different than a text. No, that's a good thing. That's the human connection part, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's good to have these discussions. I think, you know, maybe you and I in this generation, you know, you weren't allowed to have these discussions. I know I wasn't. I mean, you would just be a lesser man if you had these discussions with a friend of yours or something like that. So that's been a real positive change, I think, in our society is, you know, acknowledging that these issues exist. They probably exist for most, if not everybody. Yep. And, you know, to acknowledge that. And be susceptible and, you know, open yourself up, I think is probably a good thing.
I think once you start to realize that other people are experiencing the same thing, then you don't feel like you're alone in the world, which can be part of it, right? Especially when you're sitting in front of the computer or, you know, you're not able to go out and do things. And And I think that's a key thing is get out and get moving and stuff. Like as much as what I thought winter would be kind of like the down cycle time, like I was saying earlier, I kind of reflect on it. In winter, it was like I was on the trap line. I was ice fishing. I was building, prepping, fixing, restoring in the shop. And it was like I was super busy in the wintertime. And then spring turkey season hit and you're go, go, go to almost like the point of like fatigue. And then it was like, whoa. And I've been bear hunting, but I've been doing just short little stints, like going out for like maybe one or two nights. I'm headed out after work today. Tomorrow's the last day of the season and just gone out on these little stints. And those have been like hugely refreshing and great sleeps out in the woods and stuff. But another part of that as well is when spring hit that I've been going to yoga since last December, anywhere between 6 and 8 times a week, sometimes three times a week. It's twice a day, seven in the morning and 6 o'clock at night. And it's like, it has been absolutely amazing for my body and my mind. Like there's a number of aspects to yoga that are mental, physical, balance, all kinds of stuff, sweating in that hot environment. And I was really feeling this like toned up. Like I could stand up straight. My chest was out. I was breathing, you know, deeply. And I was just like, wow, like I felt like toned and felt good. But then as spring started to roll on and everybody's like, oh, go to the lake, do this gardening, yard, hiking, da 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 da. And fewer people are going to yoga. So they're cutting back on classes. You know, Wednesday mornings canceled, Thursday mornings canceled, this, you know, all these sorts of things. So now I'm down to, and then when I go hunting or whatever, it's like I'm not, you know, I miss a night here and there or whatever. And I am partly thinking in all of this is just this reduction in body mobility of being, and I think my body needs it a lot more than what I thought. And so I've reduced the amount of time that I'm in there doing that stuff by 50% since the winter time. And I can't help but feel that's part of it as well. So get out and move.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Well, I sure did that yesterday.
With your mountain bike. Yes.
Yeah.
Right on.
Hey, so the other reason, the main reason that I wanted to talk to you today was because we didn't catch up at all on your turkey hunt. I mean, you and I last saw each other at turkey camp and then we parted ways. I came home and we weren't successful on that hunt, but you, of course, kept hunting. And then, yeah, eventually one day I got the text with the picture of you with a turkey. So I'm desperate to sort of hear how that came out.
So after you left, then I started going to the good area where there's lots of turkeys. I'm like,
yeah, that's about right.
You can't get one like your first trip. First wild turkey I ever saw. I shot it. Wow. Opening morning, like 5 minutes into the season. It's like, yeah. No, you're going to put in a couple of years.
Yeah. Well, which is good. I don't
know. No. Well, the part of this story is my daughter lucked out as well this spring. So
that's
So we had this, just to recap our hunt, the opening week of the season was probably the busiest opening week for gobbling activity that I've ever seen in like 20 years of turkey hunting here. Like it was just every single day we could find multiple birds and have multiple opportunities, you know, and it was great. I absolutely loved it. I learned a lot this year, which, you know, from that early season hunt and trying to figure out what's in their brains, like what's driving them to become a better turkey hunter. And I mean, we threw everything at the kitchen sink at these guys and they just weren't in the dynamic to respond and come to a hen call. Cause like I've said that the whole act of turkey hunting is the reverse of their courtship biology, which is the hens are supposed to come to the toms and toms follow live hens around. So by calling and trying to get a tom to leave is kind of going against them. So if there's the slightest little things going on out there, that it's harder to pull them to you. And that's definitely what we experienced. We got lots of callbacks, we got lots of responses, but we didn't have the engagement of toms just like, wham, he's coming. Like right now, it's sort of like, it's like, yes, he's leaving. It's going the opposite direction. And so that's common all across North America. You get into following the turkey circles and you will see people talk about this everywhere. It's just like, what a week, you know, just nothing, couldn't get a bird to come in, wouldn't come, you know, all of these sorts of things. And then it's like a light switch flips. And you take your life in your hands because there's like gobblers coming for you. And so what I did after our hunt is I gave it a couple of weekends. I just took a little bit of a break from it and just kind of let one, I needed to kind of like sleep in and recover a bit, but also to give a little bit of time for the ebb and flow of their own cycles within their breeding season to maybe change a little bit. So when I went out, I maybe hit one of those periods where it was just full on toms coming after hens, and I lucked out. That's exactly what happened. So go ahead.
Start with your daughter and her turkey. I want to hear the story and the situation and try to learn from that.
So the first time I went out after you and I had hunted, my daughter and my son-in-law were in town and we all went out one morning. So I went to a different place. It was a little, not quite as far out as where you and I were. And my strategy in that area was I go in the dark, park the truck, hike half, 3/4 of a kilometer, and I get up on a bit of a ridge. And then I'll do some shock calls during the dark into the draw and the distant ridge, sort of like a kilometer-ish away. If they're roosted on the far ridges or the ridge that I'm on, then I know first thing in the dark where they are. If they're not there, then I've still got some time in the dark to drop over the ridge and look for them on the other side. So that's what we did. We walked up to this ridge, shot called, nothing. So I said, we've got to start dropping off the backside now. So we dropped partway off the backside of the ridge. I stopped, did a shot call, and I heard a gobble down on the flats, off the ridge. So I said, let's go, like, to get as close to them while they're still in the roostery because of the dark. So we dropped off the ridge and we're giving her in the dark through the flats and through, it was open forest kind of country, like where you and I were in. And we got pretty close to the roostery, a bit of an opening. There were three of them just gobbling their heads off, as we say. And so we're like, this is perfect. Like, multiple toms together in a roost tree are a really good scenario, because generally they're not with hens. They're a younger bachelor group and they get excited and they fly to the ground and it's a foot race to come to you if you start hen calling. So we got set up. I stayed in a little patch of like thick forest, kind of just behind them. I got them set up, the decoys in front of them, anticipated the direction that the turkeys would come at them. And as I started to do a little bit of hen calls, these three toms were just like losing their minds. Another one, a fourth one, about 500 yards away up on the ridge where we came from, was gobbling.
This episode of the Food Afield podcast is brought to you by our friends over at Folding Mountain Brewing. Folding Mountain Brewing Tap Room and Kitchen is located 10 minutes west of Hinton, Alberta, at the edge of Jasper National Park, overlooking the beautiful Rocky Mountains. So the next time you're headed to Jasper National Park, stop in and visit Folding Mountain Brewing and make sure to order their lager. That's my favorite beer, and it recently won a gold medal at the 2022 Alberta Beer Awards.
And as it got light, the three in front of us came down out of the roost and they stayed at the base of the roost trees. The one that was half a kilometer away on the ridge came out and he was coming to us. And he had quite a distance to cover compared to the other ones were 75 yards away. He was 500 away, but he was covering ground and he's coming fast. And the other three that were right in front of us just stayed there. They didn't come to us, but everybody's gobbling. It was super exciting. And the one that was coming from the long distance, he was closing the gap on us quite quickly. So I kind of, he was coming from the left as opposed to straight in front of my daughter and son-in-law. So I told my daughter, I said, turn a little bit and get facing the direction he's coming. And pretty soon you could see this red head coming along and you know, their necks are stretched out. They're trying to see over top of the bush and he spots the hen decoys and then puffs out and he gobbles. And I could see he was a nice long beard and he's kind of like strutting and he's following the edge of the forest, but he's out there just a little bit, about 45, 50 ish kind of yards. And then I'm pretty sure he saw my daughter sitting underneath the tree and stuff, and he managed to pick her out. This is a problem that I've had turkey hunting, is if they're coming at you, like if they're coming at you from the side, sometimes they can see your profile better than if they're kind of looking more square on or quartering at you. It's like you're a smaller object against a tree, but from the side, you know, your torso and your legs are out and you're kind of this bigger object and they're like, whoa. And so anyways, he spotted her and then he was kind of like, oh, not good. And he turned and he was starting to leave, but he was gobbling. And these other three younger toms that were out in front of us, they were starting to come towards him, but I think they sensed like that he said, come on, let's go. And so they were basically set to like go right past us, like they were going to vacate the area as well. And they came into sight, three of them. They were walking by, but they were not going to come to the hen decoys. They were going to go and follow this longbeard. And they managed to be walking by as close enough that they stopped for a second look at the decoys. And I said to my daughter, I'm looking at it and it's like a young Jake. And I just said, if you can see him, take him now. This is it. And she got him.
Oh, good.
So it was
quite a long shot awesome. Then.
No, the Jakes were coming. The three of them were coming closer. It was about 30 yards for her. The big long beard, he got weirded out at about like 45-ish, 48 yards, somewhere in there. And then he started to leave. That was a really good learning experience for me because they're, even though it's breeding season, and I've seen this before, the longbeards are at the top of the pecking order, but they've got this young cohort that for some reason, they allow them to travel with the dominant bird. They're not like other like elk or whitetails or whatever that fight and drive the younger bucks off and say, stay away from me in breeding season. We'll get back together at the end of the season. It's like they allow them to travel with them. And I think what was happening is they were roosted separately, half a kilometer apart, but those young ones didn't come out of the tree and come straight to us and our hen decoys and our hen calling because they were waiting for the old guy to come and get him and give him the instructions for the morning. So they kind of, that was super interesting.
Yeah.
But that morning was insane. There were more, after those four left, there were more gobbling in the vicinity that were responding to our calls. And over the course of that morning, we had 9 tom turkeys, Jakes and toms, come in for a look. So after my daughter got her, she went back in the bushes and I went and sat up front with my son-in-law and we had birds coming in that were stopping, having a look. Maybe a tree was in the way. They weren't quite right. And then they would get a little bit suspicious and then they would go off. And it was like, it was just chaos around us for finally at about 11 o'clock in the morning, I was still gobbling them. They were still like 150 yards away from us going nuts. I was like, you know, let's just leave this and not overcall. And then they'll be like, you know, there's something weird with that call. And so we backed out at about 11 o'clock in the morning. We had one bird. It was a great, great morning.
Oh, wow. No kidding. That's, I mean, we experienced action, but nothing like that. Hey, that's awesome. Good for her.
No, absolutely.
Okay. So now, I want to ask you about your bird. What happened
with
you?
I went back. Let's see. Did I go back the next morning or the next weekend? I think the next weekend.
Yeah.
Yep. To the exact same spot. Basically that we had sat. I moved out to a little farther out. I could almost, the feathers from where my daughter had got hers were kind of like right in front of me because there sort of seemed to be this, it was like if we were just sitting out there 15 more yards, more of those birds would have been in perfect shooting position, the other ones that were coming in. So I moved out a little bit and it was almost the exact same scenario. There was like a bird roosted a ways away, came out of the roost tree. They were coming towards me in the morning, but then I heard a few hen calls and they were all like moving 200 yards to the north of me, traveling through the trees and then cutting across and up on the hill. And they were kind of doing like the like magnets where they were kind of repelling each other. They just kind of like arc around this bubble that I was on. So, had a great morning, called some toms, got my eyes on a few of them skirting through in the woods. But I didn't connect that morning. Then the next weekend, which was, I think, like the 13th and then the 14th, and the season closed the Monday morning. So I literally had that last weekend. So the Saturday morning, I went out to the exact same place, but I went 200 yards to the north, kind of where all these birds seemed to be kind of staying on the outer periphery of where we were. And I went out there, got all set up, made a little blind kind of for myself. A lot of times I'll break off dead branches or tree branches and pile them up on me and make myself in like a cocoon blind just to help camouflage myself. And nothing. No gobbles, no response to shot calls. Sun came up and it was just like dead quiet. And I'm like, oh, geez, like maybe the last day or two of hunting for the whole entire season, I'm not even going to hear a tom. This would be like the first day all season where I didn't hear one. And then I'm just like, no, I'm just going to stay here and just patiently wait them out. Because somewhere they're probably out there roosted. They can't hear me. I can't hear them. And maybe some point in the morning they'll walk past me. And about 40 minutes after the sun rose, all of a sudden I heard a gobble off in the distance. And that's exactly what there was. There were two of them that were roosted quite a ways away from me. And they started traveling along in the morning. And they were coming just to the north of me. But they stayed around the outside of me. They were calling to my hen call. And they swung to my left. And I could see them going along the edge of an opening through the trees. I could see these heads going along. They would stop and look my direction and gobble. And the lead one, he just kept right on going. He wasn't coming to me. And the one that was lagging behind, all of a sudden, I saw him in the woods coming towards me. I saw the red head. And he would puff out and then come down. And he was like, coming in for a look. My decoys and gobbling and, you know, head outstretched, and they puff out and they look, strut, and then they puff back down. They walk forward a little bit. They got their head out. They're looking. They puff out the kind of this little dance. And finally he got to about 30 yards and he stopped and he had his head stretched up and he was taking a look at my decoys and got him.
Bingo, bango, bongo.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nice. So. And that was he a bigger one?
No, he was also like a year old bird, younger one.
Okay.
So.
Okay. Yeah. I'm trying to remember the picture that you sent me. I don't even think it was a picture of the whole bird. It was like a picture of some feathers, I think, or
feathers
something.
Feathers in the tail and stuff. And yeah. and it was the peak bloom of the balsam arrowroot, like they call the sunflowers here, these big yellow wildflowers that grow in the dry forest ecosystems, and they're about, you know, 4 inches in diameter. So it was just absolutely gorgeous, you know, in the forest. So I set my bird up there, just had some of the feathers and tail feathers and stuff and the yellow balsam root flowers that I took a picture of. So
nice. Good. Well, everybody, I have been chatting here with my very good friend, Mark Hall. Mark is the creator and host of the Hunter Conservationist. He also has a few other brands. Round Canada?
The Round Canada podcast. Yep.
Yeah. Is that the only one you're working on? You had the Hunter Diaries as well.
Yeah, I had the Hunting Diary podcast, which was on our Patreon platform, along with the Underground podcast that Curtis and I do. And the Hunting Diary was kind of like field recordings. It was just me and the dog doing some hunting and talking through what was in our mind and stuff. And I was releasing episodes from all of last fall's hunting season up until when I had a hard drive crash and lost all of the... Right. Actually I got them back. I lost the December archery tree stand hunts and my whole entire trapping season. So I was missing those files for almost 6 months until a forensic company recovered them.
Oh, good. Well, oh yeah. Good for you. And gives you the excuse to, record a bunch more here this year, right?
No, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I got a lot of appreciation for these field recordings because it's like fit stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Right.
Hunt and
it's
shoot.
Like you said,
and
a diary.
And recordings and cables that get hung up and stuff and batteries that run out.
The escapades of Ruger. I like hearing those stories.
Yeah. Yeah. He was on a lot of the Hunting Diary shows and kind of
sorting my way through the life of a lab puppy out duck hunting and stuff. So it was
awesome.
It was a lot of like, come here, come on, Ruger, get back in the blind. There's ducks coming.
Yeah. All right. So how do folks find you, Mark? What's the best way to track you down?
Instagram is The Hunter Conservationist, and the website is thehunterconservationist.com. The Hunter Conservationist podcast is on all the major platforms. So,
yeah. Well, I've been running ads for your show here on my show for the last quite a while now. And so hopefully some people have checked you out because it's a great show to listen to if you're interested in the biology of things or the conservation of things, the advocacy of the hunting heritage, all sorts of, you delve into all sorts of topics like that, which are amazing. So we appreciate you for sure. Thanks so much absolutely. For being here, Mark. I appreciate it.
Well, it was awesome to come back and, like I said, see your face and kind of like relive the spring, the late part of the spring turkey season. And it was unfortunate that, you know, that unfolded after you had left, but it's a little bit of excitement for next spring. We'll have to decide if we want to change locations maybe and go into this area that we were in, because there was definitely a lot of toms in that area. You and I were hunting an area where there was a handful of toms, but way more hens. And we just couldn't compete with those hens, and they weren't shy about letting us know that we just didn't cut it.
We didn't cut it.
Yeah. Absolutely. And for this area, there was like maybe like, I don't know, 8 or 9 toms and one hen or something. And it was a completely different dynamic. So not as pretty as of an area. You can hear the highway from, you know, from the spot. It's not kind of like wildernessy like where you and I were, or any moment you might get mauled by a grizzly bear while you're trying to get a turkey. This other area wasn't like that. So we'll see next spring.
Yeah. Well, whatever, dude, as long as I get to hang out with you and call turkeys, that's all that matters. So looking forward to that for sure.
Absolutely.